You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Elisa.
Time for episode 431 of Geekiest Show Ever. How are you doing today?
It's another day in paradise.
Yeah, you could say that. We might want to leave it there.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, I do want to mention that we had feedback from listener Andrew.
Yay.
About our Blue Sky episode.
Thank you, Andrew.
And yeah, and he said, really liked your show about Blue Sky. I didn't know enough or hadn't really explored the functions. So thank you for that. And if anyone else wants to give us some feedback, we will let you know at the end of the episode, because there's lots of ways you can reach us. And we'd love to get your feedback, and we'll read it on the air, just like we did with Andrew.
Yay, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for taking one for the team. Showing them how it's done.
So today you wanted to talk about AI.
AI and you.
Yeah.
Almost all the vowels. I'd like to buy a vowel.
let's see. My very brief opinion about AI is I think it can do a lot of good. Like when you are using it for medicine, you know, doing surgeries, doing research. Overall, I think it's horrible. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like AI.
When I think of AI, I think of, like, especially what I've been reading about lately. Like, there was an article today, for example, that just kind of hit a little bit of a, I don't know, nerve, funny bone, I don't know. Like, when you were a kid, did you ever play that little game called Operation, where you would go in with the tweezers and it would go bzzz? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of what it hit
for me. Oh, yeah. We all did.
So I'll link it to the show notes, but there's an episode from 404 Media, and the headline was just kind of funny. It says, OpenAI furious, DeepSeek might have stolen all the data OpenAI stole from us. I just think that's hilarious. That was published today. I mean, think about that. Think about what that does mean. It's like OpenAI is furious that DeepSeek, so that's like this, I think it's a Chinese company, right?
China, yep.
Yeah, from China. So DeepSeek is another AI company, like OpenAI, okay? So basically OpenAI was this AI company that gobbled up all of this data that, you know, these models that trained on all of this data that they stole from us. Okay, stole, borrowed, whatever. We fed it. Okay, we didn't start the fire, right? Blah, 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 right? We gave it all the data. They stole it from us. They beg, borrow, steal, whatever you want to call it. Okay, you know, those Facebook quizzes that we always keep telling you people don't answer the darn quizzes. Remember, mm-hmm. We keep saying,
know people who do.
Still.
My flower is a rose. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Exactly. Stop. Your favorite first grade teacher, her name was aluminum foil. What do we keep telling you? It's aluminum foil. It doesn't to be the correct answer. You want to use fake answers. What matters most is that you can get to the answers. They don't have to be, and they shouldn't be correct. Don't use the correct answers. Make sure that you can get at the correct answers, but don't make the answers correct. And for everything that you hold holy and dear to you, make sure that you're using a credential manager to keep track of all these credentials. And that's why I'm calling it a credential manager, because gone are the days when we could just call it a password manager, because we have to keep track because we can't have nice things. We can't have nice things because you all keep screwing it up for it. Everything is screwed up. Yeah, that's why I said, I'm spicy today, man. I just...
Don't you love the quizzes where they say, your first name is your birth month and your last name is the first letter of the street you lived on when you were growing up? I'm like, oh, God, stop, stop. And then I see all these people go, I'm jelly... flower, I'm like, stop it, please.
I like Jelly Roll.
Yeah, just stop it.
Jelly Roll's in my playlist. I just want y'all to know that.
I have one song of his, but
I have two.
You win.
Oh, I just think that's funny. Anyway, so yeah, I just, you know, I read this headline and I just think it's kind of like, I'm cynical. I am cynical AF right now. When I look at that headline, the OpenAI is furious that DeepSeek. I keep wanting to say DeepSync. That's why I keep saying it over again. I want to say DeepSync. And now you do too. DeepSeek, S-E-E-K, DeepSeek might have stolen all the data. You eat all food, you no come back.
Do you remember, I believe it was the Olympics last summer, there was a commercial for some sort of AI, and I believe that there was such a public outcry that they pulled the commercial. The first time I saw it, I'm like, my jaw dropped. I'm like, are you kidding me? It was something like,
I think so funny. Father, you sound like my dad. Father, did you see that commercial?
A father wanted to write a letter to his daughter, maybe, and then so he had AI do it for him. It was just something ridiculous. I'm just like, what?
He did what for his daughter?
If I remember it correctly, he wanted to write a letter to his daughter, so he had OpenAI do it.
Oh my God.
Or one of the AI. I'm like, what? It was something about writing a letter. And I watched it and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Wow.
Wow. This is horrible.
Yeah.
People are going to start doing their term papers. Okay, I have to write.
Start. I think they already have.
I have to write a paper about the Revolutionary War and the Battle of Saratoga. So lay it on me. It has to be, you know, 3 pages, double face, you know, double space typewritten. And then there's no.
Yeah.
And
no original thought.
We already know about social media and the deep fakes.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
You know, making phone calls saying that the election day is a different day,
yeah.
or saying that candidate A said something yeah. against candidate B when it never happened, and then the pictures.
Yeah.
There's one picture I saw the other day on social media that showed an alleged undocumented migrant being hauled away from ICE by ICE Ugh. On both sides. And on the back of his shirt, it said, Latinos for Trump. And it turned out that was fake. It, you know, like he was wearing yeah. a gray shirt, but that Latinos for Trump
got
was not on his shirt.
Right.
So AI had created
yeah.
that. It's like,
because all you have to do is just give me a picture that looks like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just like, I hate that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the tolerance for it. It's
yeah.
like conspiracy
and so everybody's
theories.
Like, everybody's all worked up.
Tolerance.
Everybody's yeah, all worked up tolerance. Because nobody knows what's real anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. That's what's,
this is why
it's sad.
As much as I agree that there can be good done with AI,
right?
I think it does more harm than good. And it also doesn't give a lot of right answers. It doesn't answer questions. For example, we're going on what I'm calling a baseball tour at the end of May, where we're going to different baseball stadiums. So I want to know.
We're actually going to talk about baseball right now, just so you know.
Yeah. So I want to know. Before I buy a ticket, do they have an all-inclusive food package? Because some of the stadiums I've been to, you pay, you know, so many dollars and you get food included with your ticket.
Real sometimes food, it's not like 3D yeah. printed crap.
Yeah. Sometimes it's worth it, sometimes it's not. But so I want to know. Well, it's too early to call box offices. So when I go onto the website, they'll say, chat here. It's not a person you're chatting with. Mm-hmm. It is
an AI chatbot.
And when you ask the question, do you have an all-inclusive food ticket? Tickets go on sale Sunday at 12 o'clock. Like, that's not what I asked you. I want to talk to a human. So the answers are not, they're not even answering my question.
You know, back in my day, we used to have to walk up the hill in snow in both directions. Like, right? Like, that was like what our parents would say. And like, you know, my kids are going to complain about this. And I'm going to be like, you know, back in my day, we used to have to talk to a foreigner with a really deep accent. And you couldn't understand a word that they said. Now you have to talk to a chatbot.
You are salty today.
I am so salty. I should podcast more often when I don't have enough sleep. These chatbots, they're going to make you beg to talk to a foreigner again.
But in every experience I've had, they've been terrible. I'm like doing the equivalent of screaming, human. You know, I'm typing in capital letters, human. So at least let me talk to someone who's like an actual person on the other end so I can explain. That's why I know a lot of people would rather do a chat than a phone call. I would rather do a phone call because I want to explain what the problem is, make sure they understand it. And then when they give me an answer, I can reiterate, okay, if I'm understanding you correctly, I need to do X, Y, and Z.
No, not me. Not me, man. I like the chat. You know why? You know how like back in the day, like, you know, you'd like to talk to a person because you could hang up on them. Like you could slam the phone down, and you can't do that now anymore because it's like click. But what I like to do when I chat with someone, I like to type really hard, agent in all caps, A-G-E-N-T, agent. I said agent.
I do human. Human.
Human. Human. Or when you're – another tip for when you're – see, this is where we get to the tips part of it. So when you're – just so you know, when you are chatting with a chat where while you're waiting or when you have been able to discern that you are chatting with a human and not a bot because, I mean, this – and I mean, let's be honest. This is a skill. This is a 21st century digital skill that you need to learn how to discern when you're chatting with a human – at even just a call center, you don't know what language they might be able to speak. But when you're chatting with a human versus a chat bot, and you've been able to discern that, to make sure that you don't get disconnected, because that's the other risk. This is why I prefer chatting over talking, because I hate getting screwed by that. When you go and you get to talk to a human at a call center, whether you can understand them or not, because I know that that's something that really frustrates people. I usually can understand them. You know, that doesn't personally frustrate me, but I have witnessed other people getting really racist and really frustrated by the thick accent. That's why I'm just making fun of those people. I'm not actually racist and frustrated by it, but I'm poking fun at the people who are racist and frustrated by that. So I just wanted to make that clear. But, you know, and so I'll say, you know, can you please repeat that? Or usually it's because of call clarity, not because of their accent. But the thing that I do actually really loathe is getting disconnected. And sometimes I know that that's because of signal clarity. And other times I do think it's a little bit of a conspiracy theory that they wait until you get like reach to the meat and potatoes and the juicy part. And then they'll be like, I'm sorry, I can't hear. And like the call will just conveniently disconnect. Right before they're ready to like do the actual customer retention and offer you a better deal. Yeah. So that really bothers me. So that's why I'm going to pivot and say, I do prefer the chat because you can screenshot as you go and you can see, you can get it in writing and you can document the hell out of that interaction. So when you do get disconnected, you can document and screenshot with timestamps and show. So if you were, now that doesn't happen to me because I think that they know that, which is why another reason why I prefer it. So as I'm chatting with an agent, I am screenshotting and documenting it as I go, whether it's for myself or for one of my clients that I'm doing field work for. And I document the interaction as I'm going and taking notes, and I'm asking questions about, you know, the problem, the situation, what I'm negotiating for myself or the client as to what's happening, or, you know, the reduction of price or the technical support, that sort of thing, yada, yada, yada. And so here's my pro tip, aside from documenting everything and using a chat agent to begin with, sometimes it takes a while for them to get back to you and you don't want to get disconnected. So what you do is you type a period just to let them know that you're still there, because they'll actually do that sometimes. That's where I learned it from. I learned it from a couple of chat agents where they'll type a period just to kind of let you know that they're still, you know, or they'll even ask you, like, are you still there? Because it can time out and then you do have to start all over again. So you do have to make sure that if you're multitasking, because it can take a while, because sometimes I'll be working with the client. I'm like, okay, well, let's, you know, let's work with this other problem on your other device while we're waiting for them to fix our problem. So type a period or just, you know, just say, I'm still here or something, just to let them know that you're still connected, that you haven't lost your internet connection or something like that, or closed your window or something. Just type a period in the little chat box just to let them know that the call is still connected. So that's my pro tip for dealing with a chat agent. So I do prefer them. But yeah, it can start out as just being AI. And that's the thing. So AI is this new thing that, like we said, it can be good, it can be bad. It can be good in that sometimes it can, I will say in my experience, and you probably experienced this too, and most times it really sucks because it's just not the future quite yet when it comes to that. Most times in my experience, it just sucks. It's not fully baked. And most times it does not get my question answered because that's why I'm always typing agent or you're typing human. I think I'm going to start doing that now. I'm going to start saying human and see what happens because that's really a whole lot more fun. So thank you. That's that is a pro tip. I am going to start typing human.
Well, here's an example. I've got ChatGPT open.
Okay.
And I've been playing with it just a tiny bit and yeah. I didn't log
in. All right, walk me through how you do this because I've used it a couple of times, but I just kind of like, I almost kind of resist the urge to use ChatGPT just for the reasons that I just kind of like said almost under my breath that it's like, I don't know, it kind of feels lazy in a way. It's like, but in a way, it is kind of a tool I want to lean on a little bit. It's like, I have this kind of like trust but verify thing. Like, I want to.
Well, that's absolutely it with this.
Yeah.
This one, yeah. The question I posted was.
Okay, well, we'll back up a second. Walk me through how you get there in the first place. And you said you don't log in, right? So where do you go?
I do not. You just go to chatgpt.com and then it will. There'll be a place for you to ask a question.
And why don't you log in? What's your reasoning for not logging in?
I don't want them to know me. And okay. I believe if you log in, it'll have a history of the questions that you've asked, which I don't need.
Okay. So I do log in. I have logged in because I do want to save my history because there are things I have looked up that I do want to go back to at some point in time.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that point. But the question that I asked was, do the Baltimore Orioles have an all-inclusive ticket?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the answer was, yes, the Baltimore Orioles do offer an all-inclusive ticket option. And then it goes into a little explanation of what an all-inclusive ticket is. And then it says the specifics can vary based on the seating section and the game you're attending. So it's always a good idea to check the Orioles' official website. Or contact a customer service. Would you be interested in attending a game in one of those sections? So I put yes. Nice. The all-inclusive options at Camden Yards can really elevate the experience. And then it goes blah, blah, blah. And then it gives me three options of places that I could purchase a ticket. But not the one that I'm already aware of. That one has not been listed. Then it says, you'd want to check the specific game you're interested in as availability and offerings can change, especially depending on the day of the week or special events. Do you already have a game in mind? And I put May 26th, which is Memorial Day, Monday. They respond, May 26th sounds like a great date, exclamation. That's a Saturday. No, it's not. It's a Monday. And then it's, you know, went on to tell me that, you know, if I want to get the all-inclusive ticket, I should buy it now. So that's one where the answer was partially correct, not complete, and gave me the wrong date. Day of the week for the date. So do not take what it gives you as the gospel.
At the very, very bottom, it does say ChatGPT can make mistakes. Check important info.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, clarify important info.
Yeah.
In your searches, what have you noticed that it gets wrong the most? Like dates? Like can you qualify any particular category of things that gets wrong more frequently than others?
I haven't used it a whole lot. So I'm not at the point yet where I can say it's dates that it gets wrong or it's locations that it gets wrong or it's the factual information that is wrong or incomplete.
Like for images, for example, like right now we're sourcing lookup questions, you know, questions and answer kind of thing. Like you're researching something, crowdsourced information, if you will. For example, I know that imaging, when you're looking at images, right now, at this moment in time, it seems that hands and fingers is one of the most telltale signs of an image that has been sourced by AI. So that's what I was wondering with image. I wonder if there's a telltale.
I've never looked up an image. Let me see. Let me look up an image of, what should we look up? An image of what?
Well, before we were talking about in a previous episode, an image of ourselves that we were trying to get it to compilate. Like I was trying to get it to make an image of myself. Like I gave it an image of myself and then I said, okay, make an image of me wearing purple lip gloss. And I did ask it to give myself a necklace with a pearl pendant on it, like the one that I'm wearing right now. And it did. It actually did give me a necklace. It looks just like the one that I'm wearing. But I said, I wanted it to give me dangling pearl earrings. And it just absolutely refused. It gave me these really wacky, it gave me purple earrings, which were nice, but they weren't pearls. I asked for dainty pearl earrings.
And, you had to upload.
I gave it a source image to work off of.
I asked it, give me an image of Tom Petty.
Ah.
And it said, I can't provide images, but I can definitely describe Tom Petty for you.
Really?
Or point you toward a place where you can find images of him. He was often seen wearing a casual, cool style. Think leather jackets, long hair, and a bit of a rugged rock star vibe.
Hmm. Okay. Because this is ChatGPT that we're using, and this is more of a textual tool that just spits out text. Because I don't think this works with images at all. Because this is just a messaging thing. You might have to... This is a language model, I think. I don't know that this is a... Because this is a chat. This is ChatGPT. I don't think this is what you would use for imaging.
Now, there is something, if you've played with at the bottom, it says, surprise me, code, make a plan, summarize text, get advice more. So if I click on code, they give me examples. Help me debug my code. Help me write a function. Help me simplify my code. If I do surprise me, it'll say, surprise me with a story about yourself. Surprise me with my horoscope for the day, my seasonal color analysis.
Hmm.
Let me click on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, do a seasonal color analysis for me based on a photo. And then it says, invalid conversation body. So I don't know if that means it can't answer or because I didn't give it a photo. So let me get rid of that.
Over on the left in the sidebar, it says, explore GPTs. So it says discover and create custom versions of ChatGPT that combine instructions, extra knowledge, and any combination of skills. And so it says trending, there's an image generator. It's the number one trending. It says a GPT specialized in generating and refining images with a mix of professional and friendly tone. And then it goes on, blah, blah, blah. And then there's Write For Me, Canva, Scholar GPT, Logo Creator, Consensus. So this is where I was gonna say, I just posted this recently after I read that article, and I said, you know what this reminds me of? This whole explosion of AI generated imaging. You know what this reminds me of? And this relates to me personally. Back when I, because of the timing, when I attended college, so I graduated in the 90s, and then I attended college in the 90s. And I graduated in the early 2000s, then we had 9/11 and everything kind of started to fall to crap and all that kind of stuff. So when I was just starting out after I got my art degree in graphics, it was right in the midst of the quote unquote desktop revolution. You know, back when I started college, I was taking back then, it was still back in the quote unquote olden days. When we literally we used cut, copy, and paste, like with an X-Acto blade and wax and glue. Mm-hmm. And it was called commercial art because you would make a commercialized living out of using your art skills to create graphics and design and advertising. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get into advertising. That's originally what my passion was. I wanted to be an advertiser. That's what I wanted
to do. Me too.
Yeah. And so you remember back in the day, like where, you know, you would be like, you used your creative talents to, you know, come up with headlines and write body copy and draw pictures. And, you know, you would see kind of like commercials on TV, or you would see ads in magazines or billboards. And like, that was my dream. Like, I wanted to be able to design and produce and publish something that would end up in a magazine, or I wanted to be able to like ride my bike or be in a car someday and like see a billboard, you know, up in the sky. Like, I mean, I did get to accomplish those things, which was great. And I fell in love with the digital graphic side of things. And but I also knew like you had to study and really work at it. And when I went to college, you had to learn fine art. I mean, you had to study a whole bunch of like background stuff. You had to take art history. We had to draw naked people. You know, you had to take charcoal and you had to take sculpting. You had to learn all of the fine arts that went into it. And you had to learn all of the basics in order to be able to get to, you had to learn all of the scaffolding in order to get to the graphics, right? You had to learn all the basics and the fine arts in order to be able to do the digital graphics, right? Because back then you were still working with pixels and Bezier curves and, you know, in the typography, you had to learn calligraphy, okay? You couldn't just, we had to learn what a typeface was before we could learn what a font was. You know, now they just call them fonts. We learned about typefaces, okay? We had to cut our own typefaces and design our own font out of a potato. I mean, we learned wood cutting by actually cutting into wood, you know, like we sculpted it. I have the scars to prove it, literally. Like, I literally, I'm not using that word, you know, loosely, I literally earned my degree with blood, sweat, and tears, and a little bit of vomit and some other bodily fluids went into it, you know, a lot of caffeine. I didn't do like the really hard drugs, but there were drugs consumed. And I'm not proud of that. I'm going to say it. You know, I lost a lot of sleep. I probably shaved a lot of years off of my life, too. Anyway, the point is that I worked really hard for it, and I didn't just get it. I earned it. I'm not lucky. I studied for it. I earned it. I worked for it. Okay? I'm not just, like, bitching here. Okay? I'm explaining something, and I'm going to get to a point eventually. But the point is that when you learn a craft, when you study and you learn a trade and then you apply those skills, when you come into something with a natural born talent and you apply a skill that you hone and that you learn, and then you use it to support yourself and your family, and you use it to make money, okay, and you go and you get a degree and all of this stuff, and you pay all that money to get the degree, and then you go out into the world and you put yourself out there and you try to make money with it. And plus, mind you, you're in all of this debt because you were sold a bill of sale and you were made promises by generations that came before you that also did it and said, this is the way, follow us. We've made this path for you to walk down. We've paved it with our own blood, sweat, and tears. And this is how you do it. We've made these modifications. Now you go and add your groove to the path. And then you do it, right? And you blaze a new trail. And you do that. And then you come out of it. And you go into the field. And you go into the industry. And you follow the standards. And you make your own new things. And then comes along a revolution, a digital desktop revolution. And that's what happened. And I accept that. And that was cool. Like, I was rolling with it, right? I'm like, okay, this is cool. You know, 9/11 came in there and effed it up and made it really difficult and challenging. I accept that. Okay, I'm rolling with it. Okay, things are going. You know, you have to adapt. You have to change. You have to learn with these things. But along comes the graphic and the desktop revolution. And on one hand, you know, it's cool, right? You've got clip art and you've taken all of these illustrators and these crafted, you know, craft makers, these people who have gone and sold their craft, right? They've illustrated these things. These gifted and skilled individuals have sold their art and made clip art out of it, okay? And font designers and everything. And then all of this stuff has been digitized. And then it's all been put into these packages and sold onto these personal home computers. So now everybody's a designer all of a sudden. All of a sudden, everybody who can afford it, okay? So now you've got a, now you've got an issue of access, of accessibility, and now it's a, now you've got an issue of, you know, you start to see the class wars and you start to see the haves and the have-nots. And so now you've got people coming into print places where, you know, places where I'm working, and you've got desktop publishing and printers at odds with each other because now they're bringing stuff in and they've quote unquote, I'm using big, big air quotes here, they've designed their own art and they want you to print it, but they've designed it in a non-standard industry format that you still have to take apart and reconstruct into a standardized industry format. And that's where people like me have come in, because then I have the skills to do that. And so you have people who have earned a degree and are classically trained designers. We've earned that title. But then you have desktop publishers who have not earned a professional title, but they still call themselves designers. And they expect to come in, like they have these expectations that they're going to have this beautiful piece of art. And they want, they have these expectations that it's going to cost XYZ. But they expect that they're going to pay this low, low amount. They want to lowball it. But they want somebody who earned and paid for and still has to pay back for a degree. But they want that person to work with desktop publishing clip art. Do you see what I mean? Do you see where I'm going with? And now, okay, so that was back then, and we all had this, like, we had to, like, choke it down. Like, it was a pill. It was, like, a hard pill we had to swallow. It was, like really difficult medicine that we had to swallow back then. Like, okay, I realize I'm a designer, and I have to work with desktop publishing. Okay, I'm going to pivot now. I'm going to take my skills, and I'm going to, like, kind of reinvent myself. I'll deal with it, okay? Now, I'm going to, like, I'm not going to be an art snob. I'm going to be a digital skilled professional, and I'm going to instead work with what I have. And what I have is I can take my art skills and I can take my digital skills and I can work with desktop publishing and I can make it into art because I know how to take it apart and restitch it back together. Because that's what I got good at. I got really good at going in and dissecting. Like, somebody would give me a PowerPoint file, and I learned how to, like, resize things, and I learned how to basically, like, take crap and make it shine. You know, I learned how to recreate stuff. I learned how to take handwritten things and retypeset it. I learned how to take an Excel file that somebody put together and they wanted business cards made out of it. Well, we don't do business cards in Excel. Sorry, honey. It gets done in Quark Express. And, you know, I spent a lot of time recreating stuff because that's how it had to be done. And that was my art. It wasn't really what it, you know, wasn't what it was supposed to be. I found a way, you know, and that's what you do because that's what skill is. That's how you do that. And that was the desktop revolution. Okay. And it took skill and it took work, right? You had to actually work for it to make it happen. And now you have this, okay? And now you just, like, you just tell it what you wanted and it does it for you. That's what desktop publishing did. You just clicked. You clicked on buttons. You just picked things out. You didn't, like, you wouldn't take out a paintbrush and some Conte crayon and some pencils and pens and rapidiographs and, like, clean your inkwells and stuff. Like, no, you wouldn't, like, draw the stuff yourself. No, you just, like, thumb through a book and, like, look up a code and you say, that's the picture of the swan I want, and drag it and drop it in place and make your your placeholder for the wedding. Like, no. Like, that's what you would do with desktop publishing. And that's, like, what I'm comparing this to. Like, that's what happened back then. You wouldn't pay an illustrator to draw you a beautiful swan for your wedding invitations. You would just go through a book and, like, get it done yourself and print it out and then take it to the printer and say, okay, make me 500 of these, please, in this color, and I need them in, like, 3 hours. Right? Now, fast forward 30 years, and we have this. We have ChatGPT image generator, and I would like this done in 5 minutes. And it's like the same thing. It's like, and you look at the images, and it's like, okay, I would like a picture of a woman holding this, you know, this. I would like a picture of me wearing dainty pearl earrings, please. And I would like it done in 30 seconds, please, because I want to. Because tick tock. I have a deadline to meet and I have to leave in an hour for another appointment and I have to get this image posted to social media because it's got to go out because I have something snarky to say. And I need those pearl earrings right now. And if you're not going to give it to me, well, damn it. You know, like, that's the world we live in. And I'm not too happy about it. I'm really kind of cranky. Like, this is the new, this is like digital, this is the desktop revolution 2.0 or something. Like, we can't even say 2.0 because that sounds so dated, Grandma, you know? Like, do you feel that? Do you feel that? Are you feeling me? Are you vibing with me, Elisa? Are you vibing with me, Elisa?
I get your groove.
Yeah. Are you down with that?
I am down with that.
Do you see the parallel that I'm drawing between the desktop revolution and this new like image generation? That it's like, oh, I feel so lazy.
But like, I was just gonna say, that's the exact word I was about to use. With the desktop publishing, I see where you're coming from an artistic point of view, from someone who has the training to do it from scratch. But at least with desktop publishing, whether you're putting together a magazine or a term paper or a graphic, there's still some work that has to be done by the user.
Some thought.
You still need to know, okay, I want to put the swan here. I want to put the date of my wedding here, the name of the church here. You know, I want it to be blue or I want it to be green. I want some silver sparkly in it. There's some thought involved. With ChatGPT, to me, it's or AI in general, not specifically ChatGPT, it just seems lazy. That's the exact word. Hey, I had to read To Kill a Mockingbird. Can you do a real quick 3-page synopsis for me? Thank you.
Yeah, but you don't even have to read it.
There's no thought involved.
Yeah, you don't even have to read it. Yeah,
exactly. That's the thing.
Really, you have to rephrase that. I've been assigned to read this book. Oh, wait, back up a second. No, that book has been banned.
Yeah. True.
I'm not allowed to read this book. Can you tell me what it's about? Because I'm not allowed to read it. It's been banned in my state. Can you please tell me what it's about?
Now, in that case,
it could be helpful.
I'm good with that. Yeah. But if it's a situation where you are assigned to read, name your book, and you just go, not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been given this assignment.
Write me a 3-page synopsis. Make sure that you tell me what the theme is, make sure you name the main characters, mm-hmm, and what the conclusion was.
I do not have time for this degree. Can you please earn it for me? That's what it's like. I kind of feel.
Way back when yeah, I went to school, back before we even had typewriters. Yeah. We had to actually read the physical book, not even an ebook. We read the physical book, and then we took a piece of paper and a pencil.
Wait, you have pens?
We had sometimes, and we had pens, and there was a lot of scratch outs.
Were they the kind you dipped in the inkwell? No, just kidding.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the first time I got a computer, I was in 1992, and I believe it was in the 94, I went back to college and just took a class. And I had to do a term paper. And when I was able to take an entire paragraph and cut it and then move it somewhere else. Yeah. I was like happy as a pig in poop. I was like,
Snoopy
oh
dance.
My God.
Snoopy
I was,
dance.
I was so excited because I was so used to using the typewriter in college, making a mistake, going, and using the whiteout. Or yeah. use, I don't know if you ever saw them. They're these little white little slips of paper that you had to put. Yep.
You had inside to put it, in, and then insert it, and you typed over top of it. Yeah,
type over it, and you had to use, you know, you could use it until it was finally, you know, covered up.
Yeah,
that's how I used to do term paper, boys and girls.
Now, did someone stand over your shoulder and go, "Oh, Lisa, you're so lazy"? How could you?
Well, no, because it was usually 6 hours before class.
Of course,
when it was due.
Of course, like, yeah.
I have all my notes. I just never put it all together. You know, up 3 o'clock in the morning. Type.
Tell me you have ADHD without telling me you have ADHD.
Of course, it's just being a procrastinator.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, ADHD. I mean, ADHD. Yeah, AI. It has an A in it.
I mean, it can be used for good. Like I said,
it can help. It can help with ADHD, certainly.
Yeah, medical research, you know, scientific, you know, different kind of scientific experimentation. Mm-hmm. It can definitely be used for good, but mm-hmm. I'm just seeing so much negative that mm-hmm. is it worth it?
Okay, here's a positive. Okay, because I wanted to tell you the story. That's what kind of sort of inspired me for this topic, actually. You know, my clients give me such amazing stories. This is what I love about what I do. So one of my clients, one of my favorite people, she told me the story about her hearing aids. And I think this is fascinating. And this is just the way that she referred to it. So we just happened to just talk about AI. I think she asked me what I thought about it or something. And she said that her new hearing aids have AI built into them. And this is how she explained to me what her understanding of AI is. So her hearing aids have an AI feature that, I guess, automates the process of whenever she goes to a different environment. So say, for example, she used this example of going into a restaurant. So when they entered the restaurant that they were meeting up some friends for a meal, and they entered into the restaurant, and then as they went to sit for their meal, and this affects me too, I actually have these little earplugs called Loop that I put in, and they're specifically for conversation. They make different styles of loops for different types of noisy environments, and I wear the kind that are for conversation. They're designed to still allow conversation to pass through, but they block out the noise that's all around you. I don't know exactly how it works, but it has something to do with channels. And so her hearing aids are such that they're Bluetooth, and so they allow, you know, her phone calls to come through. And so when she's talking on the phone, it goes right into her ears. Lots of things work like that. They're MFI for iPhone, yada yada. And she said that she didn't understand it at first until she went to this restaurant to meet up with her friends, and she said, when she was sitting down, she said, my AI, this is how she described it, my AI kicked in. Almost as if, like, when you're talking about a prescription medication, my Celebrex kicked in, you know. Like, in other words, you could feel it taking hold, like, coming to effect, like, all of a sudden, my muscle relaxant kicked in, like my neck spasm stopped or something like that. And in her case, it was her AI kicked in, because then all of a sudden she noticed that she could actually focus on the conversation, whereas in times past she would have really struggled. And the reason she noticed is because A, she could focus on the conversation, and she noticed something she had never noticed before. She noticed that her friends were struggling to focus on the conversation. So she could actually notice the discomfort in other people struggling to focus on the conversation. You know, like, what? Can you repeat that? Straining to hear, those sorts of things. So, you know, these are things that we are our senses. You know, we take it for granted. We take all of our senses for granted until something happens or degrades or we age, you know, those sorts of things. And some of it, like your hearing loss, vision loss, some things can happen so slowly over time that it's hard to imagine. We take for granted the loss until something happens and you're like, oh gosh, you know, it hadn't dawned on me just how much I really can't vote. That's really blurry. I really cannot read that menu. Or I really can't see that. Or someone says to you, you always say what? You know, do you need your hearing checked? Or, you know, oh, you really can't see that? Or, you know, and it dawns on you, really, oh, wow, I really just can't see that anymore. Or you get into a car accident or, you know, something happens to wake you up. Something raises your awareness about something. And it's a moment like that where you go into a crowded restaurant or, you know, like me, for example, I was telling you earlier, you know, I went out with some friends and what I have realized is that, you know, things like my anxiety or my hearing, I hear things fine, but I struggle with processing and anxiety and sensory overload. And those loop hearing, they're not hearing aids, they're plugs. I now take them with me. And so there are like a little accommodation that I give myself to help me so that I will start going out to social situations more often. But I realized that I have been isolating myself. I have been self-isolating and I didn't realize I was doing it because I was kind of like taking for granted this difficulty that I have that I didn't realize I had until I realized like, hey, I have not been doing these things. I have been isolating, and wondering like, why am I so depressed? Why don't I have any friends? Why haven't I been doing these things? Why haven't I not been going places? It's because I struggle so much to the point where I just choose not to go because the anxiety is so overwhelming because I can't hear people. I'm tired of saying what, or just like pretending I heard the person when I really didn't, and then not understanding what the conversation was about. So I just don't go out. I just choose not to go out and socialize. So now I have an accommodation. Now I have these little plugs that I can put in my ears or I can wear my AirPods Pro and now I can hear conversations better or I can minimize the stimulation, the over hypersensitive stimulation of all the background noise that gets in the way of being able to process what is being said so that I can focus on a conversation and actually enjoy the experience better. So in that regard, AI can be a wonderful, wonderful accommodation for someone with a disability or a less than, you know, ability, if you don't want to call it a disability, if you don't like the D word, if you're just struggling with something. It could be something temporary. It could be, you know, you're recovering from surgery and you just need a little bit of help. It's not a disability. It's just a disadvantage that's temporary at the time. AI can be a really great tool for that when you know that it is something that is tried and true and proven. It's trusted and verified to work. Something like, say, ChatGPT, like you just said, where you can ask it some questions, but, you know, it might get the date wrong. You know, it's wonderful when it's something that's been vetted and something that's been tested. And it's proven that it will work time and time again, then it's great. But when it's something that is based off of, say, a large language model that hasn't been vetted. So like my kiddo one time, you know, he showed me, he's like, Mom, check this out. He downloaded a large language model and he's like, look, check this out. And I'm basically what they showed me was that this is a large language model you can download and it's like having the internet without the internet. And you can just look stuff up, you know, they just turned off Wi-Fi. No internet connection needed and you can just look stuff up. But that's only good for so long because then, you know, things change. So if you're like a doomsday prepper or something and you want to live in a bunker, great. And you have this large language model downloaded, but then what happens when things change? So, you know, it is what it is for the time that it is. So you gotta take these things for what they are. And what they are is, you know, limited information for what it's been fed. You have to feed the little monster. You have to feed it like it's a little plant and realize that it has limits. And look at it with that information. So I don't know. I mean, we're getting to the end of the time here. So that's kind of our take on it. Those are just kind of our thoughts on where we're at with AI today, you know, in the beginning of the new year in 2025, the year of our goddess.
The year of the snake.
Is it? Oh, year in the snake, huh?
So appropriate.
Yeah.
So, Melissa, if people would like to get in touch with us and give us their opinions of AI, whether they agree or disagree with us, how would they do so?
Yes, please send us your thoughts. Send us your deep thoughts by Jack Handy. Please reach out to us. You can email us. We have a variety of ways. We've got email. We've got a website. If you want to email us, our email address is podcast@geekiestshowever.com. You can send us your questions and comments. If you send us an audio, we will consider dropping it into the next show. We'll do it. You can just like talk to us, send us a recording, we'll play it. Or if you just wanted to, we can read it like we did with Andrew's earlier in the show at the beginning. You can follow us on our social networks. You can go to our website. We have a tab. You can click on it. There's a form. You can fill that out. We have social networks, a few. Where are we on the socials?
Geekiest Show Ever is on Blue Sky at geekiestshowever.bsky.social. Mastodon is at geekiestshowever at techhub.social. Melissa is at themacmommy.com for all things Melissa. If you want to reach out to me, I'm on bluesky.senseidai.bsky.social. I am on Mastodon. I never go there, but I will get a notification if you tag me. So I am mastodon.social@senseidai.
Maybe if she show up, she'll go over there and play some more.
Yeah. We talked about this before. Mastodon, just not for me. But I will respond if somebody does tag me. And if you can't remember all that, just go to geekiestshowever.com and you'll find everything on the show notes page. So with that, I would like to thank you so much for listening. We will be back in a few weeks. And until then, please stay safe.